Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. The state of Utah wants to build a brand new 600-bed, $25 million emergency homeless shelter. So where in Salt Lake City will it go, if at all? Plus, our public transit system, TRAX, is due for a major facelift. Here's how you can help decide which routes they prioritize. Executive producer Emily Means is here to break down the news and share picks of the week. It's Friday, March 15th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Emily Means, this week, local reporter Katie McKellar wrote this question in Utah News Dispatch, which is a fantastic new local outlet we've got. What's next for Utah's evolving shelter system? And it's a great question.
What a question indeed, Allie.
Do you want to give us a little backstory? Because I think before we pose a what's next question, we have to know a little bit about where we've been.
You're right. It's kind of like that you might be asking yourself how I got here or something. record scratch. And that's what I felt when I saw this story from Katie McKellar. So about 5 years ago, Salt Lake City's 1,000-plus bed homeless shelter downtown closed. And now we're looking at building another big homeless shelter. Now, before the downtown shelter closed, the state and local government launched Operation Rio Grande, which was essentially a law enforcement campaign because, you know, around this large homeless shelter, we saw a lot of drug dealing, a lot of crime. There were a lot of concerns about public safety. So that kind of cleared the way for the eventual closure of the Road Home shelter and the creation of three smaller homeless resource centers throughout the county, but mostly in Salt Lake City. And all along, Allie, the capacity at those shelters has not been enough. Our unsheltered population has continued to grow, and there has just never been enough shelter space to make up for what we lost with the Road Home. The shelters are always at capacity, and as a result, we've seen more people camping on the streets. They've ramped up the enforcement of Salt Lake City's no camping ordinance to mitigate those impacts. And now here we are again proposing another emergency shelter, 600 to 800 beds, and the legislature put aside $25 million for it this session.
Yeah, it's been like not a 180, a 360.
Yes.
Because we went from get everyone out of the Rio Grande to recently opening the state's first ever temporary homeless shelter, like legal encampment, basically. It's basically back at the Rio Grande. It's like a couple blocks from the Rio Grande. Meanwhile, our strategy of swapping a big shelter for a bunch of smaller shelters, now the legislature is saying, we need a big shelter.
Yeah.
Our bunch of smaller shelters is not enough. Total whiplash. And like, truthfully, we can like kind of chuckle at it because it makes us feel a little bit crazy, but incredibly frustrating for service providers across the city, incredibly frustrating for people who seek shelter across the city. The message is just always changing. And that makes communicating out where you can get shelter and what the plan is even harder.
The good news, Allie, is that we will have more capacity than we have ever had before in our homeless shelter system.
Yeah.
Because on top of the three homeless resource centers that we mentioned, we'll now have 600 to 800 new beds.
I mean, that's a huge facility, 800 beds. Like, the shelters that we have right now are around what?
200, 300
beds. Like, three times the size of that. Wild.
Yeah. And so I think the big question, Allie, is where is it gonna go? That was the big question when they were citing the three smaller homeless resource centers. And I mean, it's a politically difficult decision we've seen historically. And I mean, I guess the state will be making that decision for us at some level. That's kind of what you get when the legislature is investing public dollars into a project like this. I'm not sure like where they'll find a property large enough for this.
Right.
Probably some state-owned property somewhere, maybe Utah Department of Transportation property. But is it going to be in Salt Lake City?
Or even Salt Lake County?
Yeah.
Because all we know is that it's going to be in the state of Utah. And the reality is there are places in this state where homelessness is an issue and is a growing issue that aren't Salt Lake County, like Provo Orem, like St. George. St. George is one of the fastest growing metro areas in the nation, right? We know a lot of people are living in RVs in St. George. So is it necessarily Salt Lake County? I mean, half of, like, it's the two shoulder thing. Half of me is like, duh, it's Salt Lake County. And half of me is like, I don't know, could be anywhere. There's very little transparency in these conversations, it feels.
Right. And it's a difficult conversation. I can imagine Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall would not be in favor of putting another shelter in the capital city. Her whole spiel has been that Salt Lake City has shouldered the burden of homeless services for far too long and disproportionately so. But again, it kind of makes sense to put a shelter in Salt Lake City because that's where all the services are. And we're going to talk about public transit later on in this conversation, Allie, but like, this is where the public transit is, and it makes it easier for folks seeking services to get around, right? To have access to that transportation.
Yeah.
So lots of questions remain. I'm wondering who's going to operate this shelter.
Right.
I feel like the sentiment from service providers has been, we are strapped, y'all. Like, we are at capacity. We are not well funded, and we are just understaffed and we can't provide services.
Staffing is a huge issue. We barely have the staffing to operate 200 and 300 bed shelters. The kind of staffing that it would take to operate a 600 to 800 bed shelter is extraordinary. Like, I don't know where that's going to come from. One of the things that Emily was like so interesting to me reading Katie McKellar's story, which does, I got to say, a really nice job laying out like basically how we got here, Operation Rio Grande, and also just how we got here through the 2024 legislative session. Because in a lot of ways, like, this giant shelter is the result of a lot of forces up at the Hill lobbying for solutions to homelessness that reflect their opinion or their view of what that solution should look like. And when you look at who the major players are here, and by that I mean where is the money coming from, you've got the governor, who asks for $128 million. The legislature says, we can do like $25 million for this state emergency shelter. Then Wayne Niederhauser, who's basically the governor's homelessness czar, he used to be the Utah Senate president. His fingerprints are all over a lot of the state getting involved in our shelter system in Salt Lake City and homelessness in general statewide. He's like, let's find more money. They get that $25 million up to a little over $50 million. And then a council of millionaires says, we will match $15 million donation. This council of millionaires is called the Utah Impact Partnership. And they include people like Clark D. Ivory, who of Ivory Homes, Spence Eccles, the Eccles being one of the sort of family dynasties in Utah, wealthy, wealthy, name on every building. And to me, like, reading about that, I couldn't help but just think about how it's a large-scale version of a key issue that anyone in this city who has ever worked in a nonprofit has kind of faced, which is that the problem with philanthropy is that the funding doesn't come from experts, but the funders must be appeased and often take it upon themselves, the larger the check, to act as experts. And like, did you read this letter that the Utah Impact Partnership wrote the legislature?
No, I didn't read the UIP letter.
I mean, It opens with a summary request, which is a list of bolded items that they basically are demanding. Approve a one-time appropriation of $55 million in support of an emergency shelter. Pass HB 298. Like, they're literally saying, pass this bill and we will give you this money. Mm-hmm. Right?
Public-private partnerships, baby.
Are they registered lobbyists? Are any of these people registered? Did they have to do the training? Like, and then they go into how, like, they've leveraged Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute research to do their own analysis of homelessness numbers statewide. According to them, there's been a 27% surge in homelessness statewide in the past year alone. Like, this is a very powerful entity, right?
Yeah.
But, like, they're also not day-to-day crisis workers and case managers at a place like The Road Home that are looking at this problem, that are in the reality of homelessness and poverty day to day. And so I think, like, influence is just always worth noting.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth asking what service providers need in this situation. Do they need another emergency shelter to staff? What we often hear from experts is the solution is permanent supportive housing, right? This is like apartments that have built-in services to help people address, you know, other some of the issues that have caused homelessness for them, behavioral health, substance abuse type issues. We could have had nearly 200 units of permanent supportive housing on North Temple at the old Ramada Inn, Allie.
Yeah.
That plan fell through. And you know what they're building there now? A sports and entertainment district. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, ask service providers what they want. Is it another shelter or is it housing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, just ask.
Was Gail Miller ever on the Utah Impact Partnership? Was she ever a member of that?
She sure was, Allie. She was the Utah Impact Partnership's designee to the Utah Homelessness Council for a couple of years. And she's no longer on either of those boards.
But she owns the land around and potentially, does she own the Ramada Inn now? Was that confirmed?
I'm not sure that deal has been confirmed yet, but reporting from the Salt Lake Tribune and Building Salt Lake shows that the Larry H. Miller Company has been interested in that parcel and looking at buying that up. But I don't know if the deal's been confirmed.
Okay. This is audio, so you can't see my face, but I'm doing the Charlie Day. like
the meme?
Corkboard, yes. The Charlie Day meme, the corkboard full of photos, and I look crazed, and there's a cigarette hanging out of my mouth, and I'm connecting red string. That's what's happening right now. Okay, so we mentioned Wayne Niederhauser, who's the state's homelessness czar. And one of the other things that I absolutely loved in Katie McKellar's story is that she basically put together Wayne Niederhauser's to-do list right now. And I want to just, like, kind of go through and mention all of them, because if you've been listening to this show for a while, these are all ongoing projects that we've touched on, and sometimes it's helpful to just hear them in one slew.
Sure.
So the state of Utah this year needs to figure out how to continue to fund Sandy's new homeless shelter for senior citizens and medically vulnerable people. That was a big swing and is being heralded as a big success that Sandy, a sort of like wealthy suburb of Salt Lake City, you know, took the step to open up a shelter, which they should. But the funding for it only goes through June. Got to figure out how to keep those doors open. They also need to figure out how to fund an additional family shelter space at the Motel 6 that they purchased last year in South Salt Lake. So that's going to be a South Salt Lake facility. Continuing the state's, they call it the micro shelter program. We mentioned it. It's basically the permanent camp, the tiny pods, the 50 pods that have opened a couple blocks from Rio Grande at 6th West and 3rd South. The dream, it seems, is actually ultimately to close those and then reopen something twice as big on state-owned land along 7th West beneath the 500 South freeway on-ramps. So that's going to be a big transition. And then also figure out where to put the $25 million 600 to 800-bed emergency homeless shelter somewhere in the state of Utah.
Oh, man.
Busy guy.
Busy guy. And I'll tell you, Allie, I've heard from a lot of people involved in homelessness advocacy that they think Wayne Niederhauser is the right guy for this job.
I've like heard the same.
Yeah, like you mentioned, he's the former Utah Senate president. He's a Republican. He's a real estate developer. So mm-hmm. he kind of speaks the legislature's language. Mm-hmm. And I guess the only hope we have is that Wayne Niederhauser can get it done and can convince state leaders and stakeholders in this issue that it's a crisis in our state and it needs to be addressed. It's a humanitarian crisis and we need to put resources towards it.
Yeah. I've also heard people say about him that in a situation where it sometimes feels like a lot of the people at the table have a frosty approach, maybe a clinical sort of approach, that he brings kind of a surprising amount of humanity to this work. And I like to hear that. On the note of what we can do as Salt Lakers, I just want to quickly mention, like, there are things that you can do besides getting together with your millionaire friends and writing a $15 million check to the legislature. You can volunteer at the Second and Second Coalition. I know, like, this feels like one of those issues that you just kind of want to get in there and do something. Like, it's hard to hear about, it's hard to process, it's hard to read about, it's frustrating, it's painful. The Second and Second Coalition are running, they run the movie nights at the Methodist Church at Second and Second. The church basically turns over the entire church to this coalition overnight, and then they prepare it to become like kind of a place that people can hang out and watch a movie and be warm when a code blue is called, which means that it's just really freaking cold and no one should be on the street. And so they can open this emergency facility. And then at 6 a.m. when everyone leaves, they clean it up and turn it back into a church. It's a really creative use of space. It's like really creative problem solving. They need resources. They need volunteers that can help with these night shifts. Your job could be like giving out blankets. It could be making coffee in the kitchen. They also need donations. And when I was there a couple weeks ago, I got to say the three things that were really popular: blankets, sweatpants, and waterproof shoes. Mm. And then also, surprisingly, tote bags, like, because people will kind of get together a hygiene kit and a couple things, and like having a bag to carry it in.
Yeah.
I feel like most of us have a pile of totes in our house that we are eager to get rid of. Yeah. You can take them down to the Second and Second Coalition and they will get used.
That's a great idea. And actually, I think the Second and Second Coalition has recently expanded even to St. Mark's Cathedral. So they are probably in need of even more volunteers to staff both of their programs. But
you're so right.
We will put the link to their information in our show description so you can stay in touch with them and up to date on their volunteer opportunities. But it's a good way to get involved.
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave, and they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, Let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Okay, Salt Lake City is currently the preferred host for the 2034 Winter Olympics. We actually, it was just a few weeks ago, the city and state officially submitted their application. The pictures of state leaders submitting this application looked very like the control room at like a NASA launch.
Are they wearing Roots berets though?
I don't think anyone had a Roots beret on, but definitely like it was like, you could look at the photo and see the like smile on everyone's like on like Governor Cox's face and like Mayor Erin Mendenhall's face, and you could just like hear the cheering.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, we did it. It's giving. We did it, Joe. But one of the things that is interesting about Salt Lake's bid for the Olympics is that people everywhere are hoping that we can leverage this to get better infrastructure in our city. And that could mean a transit expansion. Utah is currently leveraging some federal funding. I will say, not Olympics related, like separate funding from the federal Department of Transportation, to do something called the Tech Link Track Study, which proposes faster service, more stops, and new lines. I want to get into what exactly is on the table here because some of it is really exciting to me, even as like a casual transit user.
Yeah.
But I looked up why they called it the TechLink, Emily. And the reason is because the two key areas that they want to improve service at are Research Park up by the University of Utah and the Granary District.
Yeah.
And those are kind of our like evolving tech hubs. And we know that in Salt Lake, like embracing a tech workforce is popular. The mayor launched a Tech Lake City initiative a few years ago. But I thought that was funny. It's like our little Silicon Slopes is Tech Link.
Ooh, yeah. We got to get in on the tech boom in some way.
We're already too late. Hurry up.
Yeah, but what about this branding? The branding will get us there.
We need a logo.
Oh, man. Allie, this is exciting. So right now there are four proposals that they're looking at, and then they're going to narrow it down. Here are the highlights, though. Realigning the Red Line train so it goes through the Granary District, like you mentioned, that's along 4th West, to the ballpark station.
Right, so 4th West, 4th South, right?
4th West, 4th South, and then back up to Ballpark, which already exists on, what is it, 13th South and 2nd West, I think?
Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah. And then, so that's a big one, because there's a lot of growth in the Granary District. We've seen a ton of apartments pop up there as well, so kind of serving the needs of those residents there.
Well, and there is an old train track there. Right? There's like
decommissioned
train track that they built the, what's the like statue that they built that sits
on
it?
Yes, the hoodoo?
Is that hoodoo?
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if you can just use the same train tracks.
Yeah, I doubt it. But I guess
I'm not an engineer.
We've been there before.
Yes. So it wouldn't be unnatural to have a train there. And there's also an option to elevate the Red Line train, Allie. We're going up.
Like Vancouver?
Isn't that exciting?
We're going to have a SkyTrain?
Yeah, or like Chicago. They have an L, right?
So it would be more like Vancouver.
Yeah, maybe. that's among the options here. There's also a new orange line. So right now we have a red, a blue, and a green line tracks train. We would be adding an orange line, and that would go from the Salt Lake City International Airport to the University of Utah and service into Research Park. And that's huge, Allie.
Huge.
When I'm thinking about the Olympics, though, this is really like the line that I could see them funding because currently, to get to the university, you have to get up from the airport. You have to make a transfer at Courthouse.
Yes,
and so this would be a direct line.
Yes. It makes so much sense day to day, even just for students who are flying home on the holidays, whatever, like may or may not have a car in Salt Lake City. getting people to and from the airport, I love it. This is the thing I'm most excited about. Two airport lines and one that just cruises along North Temple. Let's go.
I love it. I love it. I could see them really making the case for the Olympics here because there's so much Olympic activity at the university, right? Rice-Eccles Stadium is kind of like the home base for that. They got to make good on that one.
Yeah.
But there are some other changes to the blue and green lines that are proposed here. Very small ones, kind of adjusting their endpoints. But this is all very exciting. And UTA told me they're in the early stages here, the early stages of this project and their analysis. They want you to comment on these four alternatives they have here, and then they're going to narrow it down to their preferred alternative, and then there will be even more community engagement around that. So this is a TBD kind of project, but we do kind of have a looming deadline with the Olympics.
Yeah. There was one other service upgrade that I thought was really compelling, which is better service for people who use a wheelchair. So currently, like, if you're getting on the blue line and you are someone who uses a wheelchair, you have to wait for the operator to put down the ramp for you. UTA said they want riders to be able to just, like, cruise straight onto the car. Awesome. Right. Yes. Like, that's so functional, right?
I love that. And the blue line, the blue line struggles with that because it's an old train. And so it has stairs. It has steps to get on and off the train. Maybe they're just upgrading the train altogether.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, we as Salt Lakers, well, we Utahns have the opportunity to give feedback on these four different blueprints. They're calling them alternatives. And you can go to this website, techlinkstudy.com. We'll also put the link in the episode description and see all four options and give feedback on all of them. I have to say, again, as a like very casual public transit user, I look at these and I don't fully understand the nuance and the technical changes happening here across all of them.
Yeah.
To me, I'm just like, more colors and more dots and more lines is good. I want that one.
Right, right. Like, I think that's
more,
fair.
More, more, more.
And listen, the survey that they ask you to provide feedback on is about that simple as well. It's like frowny face, smiley face, neutral face.
Yeah, good, better, best. We love it. There's also a hotline you can call. The number is 385-446-8005. I haven't called it, but I think someone should just to, like, who answers and what do you talk about? I want to know.
I called it, Allie. Yes, I did. And they did answer, and they answered all of my questions. That's where I learned that they're in the very preliminary stages of this.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so there is someone on the other end of the hotline if you want to give them a call.
Wow. Wow. Okay, that's great. We're fighting the loneliness epidemic, public transit.
Allie, I know that you're a casual transit rider, and I love seeing you on the train. I wanted to plug a segment we did in our Hey Salt Lake newsletter recently, which was like an intro to taking UTA public transit. I will put that in our show description if you're interested in hopping on a train anytime soon.
Perfect.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Okay, let's do pick of the week and get out of here. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
My pick of the week is our Salt Lake City library. It has recently been ranked the 15th most popular library in the world, Allie. In the whole world.
There are a lot of libraries.
in the world. So that's pretty good. We are right up there with the Library of Congress and the Vatican Library.
I know, right?
Not too shabby. So I don't know. I guess I just wanted to pick the library because I want to spend more time there. I don't know about you, Allie, but when I was a kid, I used to spend a lot of time at the library. Now that I'm an adult, not so much. And I know there are so many wonderful resources there, even besides books. There are a lot of cool events. There's like a Dungeons and Dragons club and craft workshops. Yeah, there's a rooftop that I think they're working on right now.
Yeah, but undergoing some changes, but will be great by summer, hopefully.
Indeed. And yeah, we are so lucky to have a world-class library system here in Salt Lake City.
I completely agree. That building is also an architectural marvel. In a city that is sorely absent of public restrooms, it is one of the few that the community can utilize. I will say that.
Good point.
Everything about it, it's a crown jewel. It's a crown jewel.
Indeed. What's your pick, Allie?
Okay, my pick of the week is the Salt Lake Urban Play Institute, which is a newly established thing that I learned about on Instagram. But they have this great website, slupi.org, and it appears to be kind of just like this really grassroots kind of pop-up organization started by a former middle school teacher that wants to promote play across our city. Whether that's climbing trees or sliding on snow or just kind of walking around.
That's so sweet.
I know, isn't it? It's so cool. I think a lot of us adults are deprived of play. It's something that we see kids doing. Like I walked down to get a coffee in my neighborhood the other day and kids were outside playing at one of the elementary schools nearby. And I was like, just listening to them like shout and run around in circles and scream. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Why I spend so much money on therapy, and maybe what I need to do is just like get on a swing and like jump off and land in the mud. The Salt Lake Urban Play Institute says that they have three goals. One is to promote public health in Salt Lake by infusing play into the ordinary, fun, helping others see the town as a playground, really fun, and being a resource for accessible play. I love it. It seems like they're kind of getting their footing still. The website isn't totally complete, but they've got the intention to host community field trips that are like screen-free fun, right? They're doing already Wednesday evenings at the Gallivan Center is Wednesday Men's Day, and it's like a playgroup for men. And then also workshops for educators who want to bring more play into their classrooms. So slupi.org, I'll link it in the episode description.
I love that, Allie. That's so cool. I really hope they get in touch with the skateboarders who skateboard off of the corner of the Planet Fitness downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a community they should tap into for sure.
Can I be honest? I feel like the last time we saw a lot of play around this city was not the All-Star Weekend. When I contend
any,
the city should have been absolutely covered in hoops. But it was the windstorm. Because remember the windstorm a couple years ago when it felled a ton of trees? And to be clear, it was like a somewhat catastrophic event in our city. We lost a lot of beautiful old trees. It did a lot of damage to people's homes and cars. But I saw people and kids and dogs like crawling all over fallen trees around Liberty Park. I saw people like running around and jumping over them like hurdles. I saw where trees had fallen and lifted the sidewalk and created like a little skate ramp. You could see like you'd be walking downtown and see wax along the side of the lifted sidewalk where like people had come and waxed it up and skateboarded there. That did feel like a moment where a lot of us were kind of playing. And I think it's the combo of like the availability of this like weird temporary jungle gym and getting out of the house and needing a release after riding out the windstorm. But feels like the last time we were getting really silly.
Yeah, we need to tap into that childlike wonder more often.
For sure. Okay, executive producer Emily Means, I hope you have a fantastic weekend. It looks like it's going to be sunny. Like... gorgeous, sunny, sunny, high 60 for now.
Let's get out and play, Allie.
Let's get out and play. That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Our executive producer is Emily Means. Our producers are Ivana Martinez and Elizabeth Kama. Our newsletter editors are Terina Ria and Adrian Gonzalez. And our host is me, Ali Vallarta. Music is by the local band Mitochondria. Sometimes we use music from All the Kimonos. We will be back on Monday morning with more from around this city. Have a fun weekend.